The Hobbit, Cassette 4.
After a while they came to a belt of tall and very ancient oaks, and beyond these to a high thorn hedge, through which you could neither see nor scramble.
"You had better wait here," said the wizard to the dwarves, "and when I call or whistle, begin to come after me. You'll see the way I go, but only in pairs, mind. About 5 minutes between each pair of you. Bomber is fattest, and will do for two. He had better come alone and last. Come on, Mr. Baggins. There's a gate somewhere round this way."
And with that he went off along the hedge, taking the frightened hobbit with him. They soon came to a wooden gate, high and broad, beyond which they could see gardens and a cluster of low wooden buildings, some thatched and made of unshaped logs, barns, stables, sheds, and a long, low wooden house. Inside, on the southward side of the great hedge, were rows and rows of hives with bell-shaped tops made of straw. The noise of the giant bees flying to and fro and crawling in and out filled all the air. The wizard and the hobbit pushed open the heavy creaking gate and went down a wide track towards the house. Some horses, very sleek and well-groomed, trotted up across the grass and looked at them intently, with very intelligent faces. Then off they galloped to the buildings.
"They've gone to tell him of the arrival of strangers," said Gandalf.
Soon they reached a courtyard, three walls of which were formed by the wooden house and its two long wings. In the middle there was lying a great oak trunk with many lopped branches beside it. Standing near was a huge man with a thick black beard and hair, and great bare arms and legs with knotted muscles. He was clothed in a tunic of wool down to his knees, and was leaning on a large axe. The horses were standing by him with their noses at his shoulder.
"Ah, here they are," he said to the horses. "They don't look dangerous. You can be off." He laughed a great rolling laugh, put down his axe and came forward. "Who are you, and what do you want?" he asked gruffly, standing in front of them and towering tall above Gandalf. As for Bilbo, he could easily have trotted through his legs without ducking his head to miss the fringe of the man's brown tunic.
"I am Gandalf," said the wizard.
"Never heard of him," growled the man. "And what's this little fellow?"
he said, stooping down to frown at the hobbit with his bushy eyebrows.
"That is Mr. Baggins, a hobbit of good family and unimpeachable reputation," said Gandalf.
Bilbo bowed. He had no hat to take off, and was painfully conscious of his many missing buttons.
"I am a wizard," continued Gandalf. "I've heard of you, if you haven't heard of me. But perhaps you've heard of my good cousin Radagast, who lives near the southern borders of Mirkwood?"
"Yes, not a bad fellow as wizards go, I believe. I used to see him now and again," said Beorn. "Well, now I know who you are, or who you say you are. What do you want?"
"To tell you the truth, we've lost our luggage and nearly lost our way, and are rather in need of help, or at least advice. I may say we've had rather a bad time with goblins in the mountains."
"Goblins?" said the big man less gruffly. "Oho! So you've been having trouble with them, have you? What did you go near them for?"
"We didn't mean to. They surprised us at night in a pass which we had to cross. We were coming out of the lands over west into these countries. It's a long tale."
"Then you'd better come inside and tell me some of it, if it won't take all day,"
said the man, leading the way through a dark door that opened out of the courtyard into the house. Following him, they found themselves in a wide hall with a fireplace in the middle. Though it was summer, there was a wood fire burning, and the smoke was rising to the blackened rafters in search of the way out through an opening in the roof. They passed through this dim hall, lit only by the fire and the hole above it, and came through another smaller door into a sort of veranda propped on wooden posts made of single tree trunks. It faced south and was still warm and filled with the light of the westering sun which slanted into it, and fell golden on the garden full of flowers that came right up to the steps. Here they sat on wooden benches, while Gandalf began his tale, and Bilbo swung his dangling legs and looked at the flowers in the garden, wondering what their names could be, as he had never seen half of them before.
"I was coming over the mountains with a friend or two," said the wizard.
"Or two? I can see one, and a little one at that," said Bjorn.
"Well, to tell you the truth, I didn't like to bother you with a lot of us until I found out if you were busy. I'll give a call, if I may."
"Go on, call away."
So Gandalf gave a long, shrill whistle, and presently Thorin and Dori came round the house by the garden path and stood bowing low before them.
"One or three are meant, I see," said Bjorn. "But these aren't hobbits, they're dwarves." "Thorin Oakenshield, at your service." "Dori, at your service," said the two dwarves, bowing again.
"I don't need your service, thank you," said Bjorn, "but I expect you need mine. I'm not over fond of dwarves, but if it's true, and you are Thorin, son of Thrain, son of Thror, I believe, and that your companion is respectable, and that you're enemies of goblins and are not up to any mischief in my lands. What are you up to, by the way?"
"They are on their way to visit the land of their fathers, away east beyond Mirkwood," put in Gandalf. "And it is entirely an accident that we are in your lands at all. We were crossing by the high pass that should have brought us to the road that lies to the south of your country, when we were attacked by the evil goblins, as I was about to tell you."
"Go on telling, then," said Bjorn, who was never very polite.
"There was a terrible storm. The stone giants were out hurling rocks, and at the head of the pass we took refuge in a cave, the hobbit and I and several of our companions."
"Do you call two several?"
"Well, no. As a matter of fact, there were more than two."
"What are they? Killed? Eaten? Gone home?"
"Well, no. They don't seem all to have come when I whistled. Shy, I expect. You see, we're very much afraid that we're rather a lot for you to entertain."
"Go on, whistle again. I'm in for a party, it seems, and one or two won't make much more difference," growled Bjorn.
Gandalf whistled again. But Nori and Ori were there almost before he had stopped, for, if you remember, Gandalf had told them to come in pairs every 5 minutes.
"Hullo," said Bjorn. "You came pretty quick. Where were you hiding? Come on, my jack-in-the-boxes."
"Nori at your service. Ori at—"
they began, but Bjorn interrupted them.
"Thank you. When I want your help, I'll ask you for it. Sit down. And let's get on with this tale, or it will be supper time before it's ended." "As soon as we were asleep," went on Gandalf, "a crack at the back of the cave opened. Goblins came out and grabbed the hobbit and the dwarves and our troop of ponies."
"Troop of ponies? What were you, a travelling circus? Or were you carrying lots of goods? Or do you always call six a troop?"
"Oh, no. As a matter of fact, there were more than six ponies, for there were more than six of us, and, well, here are two more."
Just at that moment, Balin and Dwalin appeared and bowed so low that their beards swept the stone floor. The big man was frowning at first, but they did their very best to be frightfully polite, and kept on nodding and bending and bowing and waving their hoods before their knees, in proper dwarf fashion, till he stopped frowning and burst into a chuckling laugh. They looked so comical.
"Troop was right," he said. "A fine comic one. Come in, my merry men. And what are your names?" "I don't want your service just now, only your names. And then sit down and stop wagging."
"Balin and Dwalin,"
they said, not daring to be offended, and sat flop on the floor looking rather surprised.
"Now go on again," said Bjorn to the wizard.
"Where was I? Oh, yes, I was not grabbed. I killed a goblin or two with a flash,
Good, growled Bjorn. It is some good being a wizard, then. And slipped inside the crack before it closed. I followed down into the main hall, which was crowded with goblins. The great goblin was there with 30 or 40 armed guards. I thought to myself, even if they were not all chained together, what can a dozen do against so many?
A dozen? That's the first time I've heard 8 called a dozen. Have you still got some more jacks that haven't yet come out of their boxes?
Well, yes, there seem to be a couple more here now. Ophelia and Keeley, I believe, said Gandalf, as these two now appeared and stood smiling and bowing.
That's enough, said Bjorn. Sit down and be quiet. Now go on, Gandalf.
Gandalf went on with the tale until he came to the fight in the dark, the discovery of the lower gate, and their horror when they found that Mr. Baggins had been mislaid.
We counted ourselves and found that there was no hobbit. There were only 14 of us left.
14? That's the first time I've heard 1 from 10 leave 14.
You mean 9, or else you haven't told me yet all the names of your party. Well, of course you haven't seen Oin and Gloin yet, and bless me, here they are. I hope you'll forgive them for bothering you.
Oh, let them all come. Hurry up. Come along, you two, and sit down.
But look here, Gandalf. Even now we've only got yourself and 10 dwarves and the hobbit that was lost. That only makes 11, plus 1 mislaid, and not 14, unless wizards count differently to other people. But now, please, get on with the tale.
Bjorn did not show it more than he could help. But really, he had begun to get very interested. You see, in the old days, he had known the very part of the mountains that Gandalf was describing. He nodded and he growled when he heard of the hobbits' reappearance and of their scramble down the stone slide and of the wolfing in the woods. When Gandalf came to their climbing into trees with the wolves all underneath, he got up and strode about and muttered,
I wish I had been there. I would have given them more than fireworks.
Well, said Gandalf, very glad to see that his tale was making a good impression.
I did the best I could. There we were with the wolves going mad underneath us, and the forest beginning to blaze in places, when the goblins came down from the hills and discovered us. They yelled with delight and sang songs making fun of us. 15 birds in 5 fir trees.
Good heavens, growled Bjorn. Don't pretend that goblins can't count. They can. 12 isn't 15, and they know it.
And so do I. There were Bifur and Bofur as well. I haven't ventured to introduce them before, and here they are.
In came Bifur and Bofur.
And me,
gasped Bomber, puffing up behind. He was fat, and also angry at being left to last. He refused to wait 5 minutes, and followed immediately after the other two.
Well, now there are 15 of you, and since goblins can count, I suppose that is all that there were up the trees. Now perhaps we can finish this story without any more interruptions.
Mr. Baggins saw then how clever Gandalf had been. The interruptions had really made Bjorn more interested in the story, and the story had kept him from sending the dwarves off at once like suspicious beggars. He never invited people into his house, if he could help it. He had very few friends, and they lived a good way away, and he never invited more than a couple of these to his house at a time. Now he had got 15 strangers sitting in his porch. By the time the wizard had finished his tale, and had told of the eagle's rescue, and of how they had all been brought to the carrack, the sun had fallen behind the peaks of the misty mountains, and the shadows were long in Bjorn's garden.
A very good tale, said he. The best I've heard for a long while. If all beggars could tell such a good one, they might find me kinder. You may be making it all up, of course, but you deserve a supper for the story all the same. Let's have something to eat.
Yes, please, they all said together. Thank you very much.
Inside the hall it was now quite dark. Bjorn clapped his hands, and in trotted four beautiful white ponies and several large, long-bodied grey dogs. Bjorn said something to them in a queer language like animal noises turned into talk. They went out again and soon came back carrying torches in their mouths, which they lit at the fire and stuck in low brackets on the pillars of the hall about the central hearth. The dogs could stand on their hind legs when they wished and carry things with their forefeet. Quickly they got out boards and trestles from the side walls and set them up near the fire. Then, "Baa! Baa! Baa!" was heard, and in came some snow-white sheep, led by a large coal-black ram. One bore a white cloth embroidered at the edges with figures of animals. Others bore on their broad backs trays with bowls and platters and knives and wooden spoons, which the dogs took and quickly laid on the trestle tables. These were very low, low enough even for Bilbo to sit at comfortably. Beside them a pony pushed two low-seated benches with wide rush bottoms and little short thick legs for Gandalf and Thorin, while at the far end he put Bjorn's big black chair of the same sort, in which he sat with his great legs stuck far out under the table. These were all the chairs he had in his hall, and he probably had them low like the tables for the convenience of the wonderful animals that waited on him. What did the rest sit on? They were not forgotten. The other ponies came in rolling round drum-shaped sections of the logs, smooth and polished, and low enough even for Bilbo. So soon they were all seated at Bjorn's table, and the hall had not seen such a gathering for many a year. There they had a supper, or a dinner, such as they had not had since they left the last homely house in the west and said good-bye to Elrond. The light of the torches and the fire flickered about them, and on the table were two tall red beeswax candles. All the time they ate, Bjorn in his deep, rolling voice told tales of the wild lands on this side of the mountains, and especially of the dark and dangerous wood that lay outstretched far to the north and south a day's ride before them, barring their way to the east, the terrible forest of Mirkwood. The dwarves listened and shook their beards, for they knew that they must soon venture into that forest, and that after the mountains it was the worst of the perils they had to pass before they came to the dragon's stronghold. When dinner was over, they began to tell tales of their own, but Bjorn seemed to be growing drowsy and paid little heed to them. They spoke most of gold and silver and jewels and the making of things by smithcraft, and Bjorn did not appear to care for such things. There were no things of gold or silver in his hall, and few save the knives were made of metal at all. They sat long at the table with their wooden drinking bowls filled with mead. The dark night came on outside. The fires in the middle of the hall were built with fresh logs, and the torches were put out, and still they sat in the light of the dancing flames with the pillars of the house standing tall behind them, and dark at the top like trees of the forest. Whether it was magic or not, it seemed to Bilbo that he heard a sound like wind in the branches stirring in the rafters, and the hoot of owls. Soon he began to nod with sleep, and the voices seemed to grow far away, until he woke with a start. The great door had creaked and slammed. Bjorn was gone. The dwarves were sitting cross-legged on the floor round the fire, and presently they began to sing. Some of the verses were like this, but there were many more, and their singing went on for a long while.
The wind was on the withered heath, but in the forest stirred no leaf. Their shadows lay by night and day, and dark things silent crept beneath. The wind came down from mountains cold, and like a tide it roared and rolled. The branches groaned, the forest moaned, and leaves were laid upon the mold. The wind went on from west to east, all movement in the forest ceased. But shrill and harsh across the marsh, its whistling voices were released. The grasses hissed, their tassels bent, the reeds were rattling, on it went. Or shake and pull under the heavens cool, where racing clouds were torn and red.